the final oral argument for today. All counsel are coming forward. Carrie Humphreys and Lorenzo Rocha versus New York Hotel and Casino, case number 65316. Ready to go? Okay.
Lead us off, and I do rebuttal if that is okay, Your Honor.
Yes, of course.
May it please the Court. My name is Josh Tomczak, and I, along with my co-counsel, Craig Drummond, today, as we have for a number of years now, have the distinct pleasure of representing the appellants in this case, Carrie Humphreys and Lorenzo Rocha. For our argument today, I'd like to use 10 minutes of our time for purposes of our initial argument and reserve full 5 minutes for rebuttal. As Mr. Drummond indicated, he will be doing the rebuttal in this case. I must confess, as I stand here today, I have kind of a sense of deja vu, because as your honors are likely aware, this is a matter that we have previously argued before this court on the same case, but as to a different issue. What is particularly interesting about the issues before the court today is, to a large extent, the parties essentially agree as to what the important statutory authority and case precedent is that should control the court's analysis of the issues today. Both parties disagree, however, on two issues. One, how the facts in this case translate into the court's analysis, and how those facts translate as to whether or not there is a duty on the part of the respondent property in this case, the New York. In order to briefly refresh the court's memory as to the facts of this case, I'll offer the following summary. On April 10th of 2010, appellants Carrie Humphreys and her then-fiancé, now-husband, Lorenzo Rocha, were visiting Las Vegas from the state of California. They were visitors to our city, and they were patrons at the New York Hotel and Casino. While there at approximately 4 o'clock in the morning, they were walking across the casino floor in a large open area where many patrons were there, even at that hour. Carrie stopped to tell another patron that she liked her outfit and wanted to ask her where she purchased it. While she was doing so, an individual by the name of Eric Farrell approached her and began making comments to her which were inappropriate and of a sexual nature. She rebuffed him. In response, he reacted violently. Eric Farrell punched Miss Humphreys repeatedly. As he did so, he caused serious and permanent injuries to her. During the altercation, he also turned his physical aggression towards Lorenzo, who also suffered injuries that exist to this day. This event, for relevant purposes today, the court should know, was not a brief one in terms of this type of physical altercation. It wasn't a single punch or a push or a wayward blow, but it was a repeated and lengthy attack.
17 seconds.
17 seconds in and of itself.
I think we understand the basic facts. I think what would be valuable is if you could devote some of your argument to what information you rely on that provides notice under the statute of this being a similar incident. Let's apply the statute.
Okay.
With the information that you provided to the district court.
As the court is aware, subsequent to the holding in Dowd, there was a determination by the legislature back in, I believe, 1995 to include statute 651.015. In other words, there needed to be a foreseeability component to whether or not there is a duty on the part of an innkeeper, for lack of a better term, it's called the innkeeper statute, in order for there to be a duty to patrons in terms of protection on the premises. In this particular case, you don't have to accept my word for it. You don't have to accept the word of the plaintiffs as they describe what happened, because in this case, as was described to the district court, you can accept the word of New York themselves. Back on May 8th of 2012, Mr. Drummond conducted a deposition of who was designated by the New York, the corporate designee and person most knowledgeable of security crime and crime prevention, including specifically assaults and batteries of patrons. Also in discovery, we received notification of a number of different similar incidents. The law, the rule in the innkeeper statute, does not require that they be identical situations. There is a component that requires similarity. However, if you address the legislative history of 651.015 as the holding in the Smith case, which is the predominant and prevalent prevailing case that the court should apply to the facts of this case, and I'll talk about that in a second, because it's an, I believe, intentionally ambiguous definition, the legislative history comes into play. And the court in Smith looked at that issue. In doing so, it says, both in the legislative history and in the analysis of this court in the Smith decision, that you don't have to have necessarily similar incidents. That is one component the court can look at. However, applying the holdings of similar situations in other jurisdictions and the previous decision in the Dowd matter, this court made a determination that the court should look at the totality of circumstances. Which brings us to that deposition on May 8th of 2012. In that deposition, the corporate designee, speaking on behalf of the New York, indicated that at the time this incident occurred, there was very little security on the casino floor, that initially one security officer responded, and that security officer stood there and watched while this incident happened for a period of time. That is important for the court's consideration under subsection 3 of the innkeeper statute, because subpart A to that indicates that it's foreseeable in the casino in this circumstance if the owner or keeper failed to exercise due care. This is an allegation of an action of wrongdoing on the part of New York. It's an allegation of an inaction on the part of New York. In other words, they did not exercise basic due care in the protection of the patrons within the casino floor. Additionally, Mr. Nulli, who, by the way, in addition to being the corporate designee, was the head of security for that premises for a period of approximately 4 years prior to him being deposed in 2012, indicated, kind of tongue-in-cheek when asked the question by Mr. Drummond, can you estimate how many times these types of incidents occur? I don't know. One month? One per month? I wish. Can you give us your best estimate? 2 to 3 per week. That was his response as the person speaking on behalf of the casino, that 2 to 3, almost an incident every other day, similar to this, happens on the casino floor. That is certainly something that put this premises on notice. And why is that important? Well, it's important for the court's consideration when you look at the Smith case. In the Smith case, the defense the respondent in a moment is going to get up and try to tell you is the reason the court should uphold the district court ruling here. It's not. The decision in Smith is markedly different than here. How? Well, in the Smith decision, casino security had responded in the exercise of due care to try to stop a harmful situation from happening before it occurred. They were escorting what they believed could potentially be something resulting in a bad activity out of the casino at the time. They were exercising due care. In addition to that, the holding in Smith indicated that there was no foreseeability because the casino in that particular case, the Silver Nugget, couldn't have known that one of the individuals involved was committing a felony on this premises by carrying a concealed weapon, or more importantly, that he would use it in a violent and deadly nature. That makes sense. But what you have to do is compare the facts of this case. I'd ask you to rather than try to fit the square peg facts of this case into the round hole of the Smith decision, I'd ask you to apply facts that squarely fit within the Smith decision and ask your honors if the ruling of the court would be different. What if the casino security in the Silver Nugget was aware that 2 to 3 shootings per week happened on their casino premises? Those are the facts here. If they were, wouldn't they be on notice of same or similar incidents that give rise to foreseeability?
So is your argument that the error made by the district court in this case was the failure to analyze the application of the wrongful acts under 3B?
No, it's both. In this case, the court indicated that there wasn't foreseeability using the totality of the circumstances situation. Under 3B, the court should have found that there was similar circumstances and activities in this case. But in addition to that, they should have exercised due care for the safety of their patrons and their premises. And let me give you just one more example. Assume in the Smith case that the casino security were aware that individuals carried concealed firearms onto their premises 2 or 3 times a week. Imagine if they knew that. If at a deposition in that case they had said that, well, under that circumstance, you would certainly believe that the exercise of due care to protect patrons would include more. It would cry out for imploring security measures to make the premises safe for patrons, installing metal detectors, conducting pat-downs, things like that. Obviously, that's an extreme example, but that's the facts of this case. The New York absolutely and unequivocally knew that they weren't providing adequate security. They admitted as much. And they knew that same or similar incidents had happened previously. And they said so under oath. I believe I will reserve the rest of our time for rebuttal.
Okay, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Seppenfeld.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Christopher Zuppenfeld, and I represent the respondent in this case, the New York Hotel and Casino. It's our position that the district court did get it right in granting our motion for summary judgment pursuant to the innkeeper statute and pursuant to the precedent established by this court in Estate of Smith. In fact, this case is precisely the type of case in which the legislature contemplated when drafting the innkeeper statute. New York does not owe the appellants a duty of care in this case because the injury caused by the third-party assailant was not foreseeable. Now, the existence of a duty is a question of law that the courts can determine. And under 651.015, subsection 3, provides the two prongs that the courts can analyze to determine whether an incident is foreseeable, thus imposing a duty upon an innkeeper.
So you're basic premise must necessarily be that in this instance, notwithstanding the testimony of the security, head of security, that New York had no meaningful knowledge that an incident like this would take place and therefore they had no duty to protect their patrons.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the reason is...
In your mind, then, what would it take for them to be on reasonable notice and to extend to them that duty?
Well, if we look at the different elements, either prior similar acts or failing to exercise due care. If we start with the prior similar acts analysis, I would say that New York may be, the incident may be foreseeable if, in fact, New York actually had prior similar incidents to the one.
2 to 3 a week or 2 to 3 a month, whatever the number that the security officer testified to, is not prior similar acts or notice thereof?
Not in this situation, Your Honor, because they were not the exact same situation, or even remotely close. In fact, the question that was asked by counsel at deposition to Mr. Null, the PMK for in New York, was how many fights occur, not how many incidents like this occur. So there wasn't any further exploration, any follow-up into the details of what types of fights we're talking about. And I think that's very important, and has said so in the Estate of Smith.
So we're going to distinguish foreseeability on the basis of the type of fight?
I think so,
really?
Yeah. I think we already have done that. If we look at the Estate of Smith, a couple of things that they were looking at when they were analyzing prior similar incidents.
A man-on-woman fight wouldn't lead one to notice that there's a man-on-man fight, or a fight that is with fists is different than a fight with weapons. Really? Is that what that statute says?
Well, I believe that the case law has interpreted the statute as
meaning. Really, what case says that we look exactly at the different kinds of fights to distinguish under 3B right. similar acts?
It doesn't say exactly they look at the exact facts of each case, but what they did consider was location of the prior incidences, the contrasts and the level of violence in the prior incidences. And that's what I think is important in this
case. Well, weren't there a couple of fights here that were within about 200 feet of where this occurred?
Right, but the location might be similar, but if we look at the contrasts and the level of violence, they're drastically different. And I think that's what's
important. A slap wouldn't qualify. Instead of a fist punch, that would be a fight by your definition, and therefore the innkeeper would have a duty. But a slap in the face maybe wouldn't. That's a distinction you're asking us to draw?
I think it's definitely a factor that can be considered in determining whether the incidents are similar. I don't think it's the only thing, but I think it's something that certainly is a consideration.
There's nothing in the court's order that indicates any analysis under 3B that I can see.
Right, and I think that's...
Did I miss something?
No, Your Honor, you did not. And I think one of the reasons is because a duty can be imposed regardless of whether or not there are prior similar incidences if we look at 3A.
Yeah, but the court rejected that. The court rejected that. So shouldn't it have made an analysis under 3B?
Well, that's I can't speak on behalf of the court. I know what the court did when they made
it. Does the statute mandate that?
I don't think that it does. I think that the case law and goes to great lengths, and especially in the state of Smith, to say that, well, we don't just look at prior similar instances. Let's also look at whether or not the owner exercised due care. And due care is an important element here in this particular situation, because it's our position that New York did, in fact, exercise due care.
While the security guard stood by and summoned assistance instead of getting in the mix to break it up.
Right. And Your Honor, just to sort of clarify, the policy that New York has is when a security officer responds to a violent altercation. If they're outnumbered, they need to wait until they have enough backup so that they can sort of, I guess, take on the other people.
So you acknowledged by what you just said that it was a violent altercation, correct?
Well, we don't dispute it was a violent altercation. But I think it's also important to note that what instigated the violent altercation was Ms. Humphreys making a spitting-type gesture toward the third party, Mr. Farrell. There's some testimony or some facts in the record that indicate that she actually spit on him. So that was what brought this whole thing to fruition. If we can get back to the exercise of due care, basic minimum precautions is what this court set forth in the state of Smith. And it's our position that New York certainly employed basic minimum precautions. Now, it doesn't require optimum precautions. It doesn't require a higher level of precautions or the perfect precautions. It requires basic minimum precautions.
Well, let's explore that for a moment. My understanding is that this record reflects that the casino admitting that it has no security audit.
That's correct.
So it would be unclear, I guess, as to precisely what kind of, not precisely, but reasonably, what kind of security was being provided and whether it was adequate.
Well, I'm not sure that's the only determining factor as to whether or not basic minimum
precautions. I didn't say it was the only one, but
right.
I'm exploring your observation that sure. The casino exercised reasonable care, but it doesn't have any information that I saw here that indicates that three security guards on a floor of 85,000 square feet is sufficient.
Well,
at 3:54 a.m. in the morning.
The property itself is 85,000 square feet, not the casino floor, especially
okay.
particularly the spot where this incident took place.
Uh-huh.
We also had 17 to 20 security officers on duty at that time. We had two security supervisors on duty at that time, and there were also two Metropolitan Police Department officers on the premises at that time as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's our position that that falls in line with implementing basic minimum precautions.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a 40-hour week of training for new hire security officers. There's a very comprehensive security operations manual. Policy, the procedures are all there. They're set forth. And what's interesting is that in the appellant's motion for summary judgment, they didn't rely upon any expert testimony or opinion from their own retained expert as to the inadequacy of these policies, because their expert is not credible. And we pointed that out in our motion for summary judgment. The other thing about their motion for summary judgment is that they didn't include these incident reports as an example of prior similar incidences. Well, if we look at the similar, if we look at the incident reports, because the majority of them have to do with domestic disputes that take place in the guest rooms. A lot of them have to do with guests getting violent with a security officer during the effectuation of a trespass. The other ones, there were some that were in the Coyote Ugly Club or the Rock of Vegas Club. Those are independently run places with their own security force, not New York security. So they're not prior similar instances.
So what's the theory? The act or omission is in that you didn't have enough security guards on the casino floor? Is that what their theory is?
I suppose that's what their theory is, that we weren't adequately staffed enough, even though they don't have any sort of expert opinion.
I mean, there isn't that this guy was a known person who came and beat up women, or, I mean, there's none of the...
Right, Your Honor, and that was going to be my next point, the sort of foreseeability of knowing that this guy was going to do what he did. Mm-hmm. And to even take it back a step, to even know how Ms. Humphreys would react when he made those lewd comments toward her. There was no indication at all prior to the incident that Mr. Farrell, the third-party assailant, was presented a risk of doing what he did, or committing criminal acts toward Ms. Humphreys or Mr. Rocha. Short of that, I don't understand. It's difficult to see how New York could anticipate this spontaneous, independent retaliatory behavior without having any sort of notice or knowledge of his proclivity for that behavior beforehand. So I think that if we look at the elements, we have the prior similar instances as well. It's our position that there are none in terms of location.
Well, let's assume that we disagreed with you on that point.
Sure.
I'd say that some of those fights, both from the testimony of your PMK, but some of the fights were in the casino floor, not up in the rooms. So let's say that there is sufficient showing of similar incidents.
In terms of location or the levels of violence or both?
Both.
Okay. Well, then we would move on to the first prong, which would be, did the owner exercise due care? Mm-hmm. And in the way we look
at it. And I wanted to explore that with you.
Sure.
What did the plaintiff demonstrate to the district court was a failure to exercise due care?
Other than the testimony of the PMK, nothing. They didn't attach as an exhibit or any support their expert report. They didn't attach the incident reports of the other instances that occurred. They didn't attach as exhibits our standard operating procedures for security, the training manual, the training security checklists, the response protocols, emergency protocols, none of that. It was simply the testimony from the PMK for New York. So if we, and again, it's our position as we've briefed, so the court is well aware, but basic minimum precautions aren't really defined in the state of Smith. However, we believe that they were exercised in this particular case. We had nearly 20 security officers. Again, we had security supervisors, and Metro was on.
Did you tender an expert report that indicated that this was sufficient?
We did, Your Honor, and that was attached to our motion for summary judgment.
Okay.
As well. And it basically went through the policies that New York has outlined for their security officers to follow, and our expert opined that these were in keeping with the industry standard. One of the things is, as you mentioned, Your Honor, the first officer that appeared or responded to the incident, it was the policy of New York for him to wait for adequate backup before he gets involved.
Let me stop you there for a moment, because once he arrived on the scene and observed what was happening, wasn't it reasonably foreseeable that injury would result? And yet he did nothing?
Well, it may have been that an injury would result, the severity of which not known at the time, but I also don't think that the elements of the innkeeper statute would require him to step in at that point. I mean, he did what he was trained to do, what the policies dictate he does, which was respond, call over dispatch and to Metro, and wait for the cavalry to arrive, so to speak.
What if, in this instance, albeit a hypothetical, the attacker had a weapon? His waiting would have been life-threatening. Yes.
Well, it could have been life-threatening for himself, too. Our officers are unarmed. So it's difficult to say in that hypothetical what's required and what constitutes basic minimum precautions. I think radioing when you're unarmed in a situation where there's an assailant with a weapon, brandishing a weapon, I think basic minimum precautions dictates that he did exactly what he did in this case.
Counsel, do you have 3B in Section 3 in front of you?
I do, Your Honor.
Could you look at 3 and 3B?
You say 3A and 3B or just 3B?
Well, 3A and 3B, but essentially 3B. Your argument here today is that there aren't a sufficient showing of similar wrongful acts.
That's correct.
I get that. But if the court were to disagree with you, for purposes of foreseeability only, is it necessary for the plaintiff to demonstrate that New York failed to provide adequate security? I don't see that requirement in 3B. Foreseeability is only tested on the question under that section, subsection, as to whether there is a sufficient showing of wrongful similar acts.
And are you, the fact that the statute has A or B, so it could be one or the other, is that what
right.
you're referring to?
Right.
I understand that, Your Honor. I think, and quite honestly,
I mean, you might be very well correct that you had adequate security and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But that issue seems to me to go to the question of breach rather than the question of duty. And the only issue the court resolved is whether there's foreseeability for purposes of duty. And it doesn't seem to have analyzed 3B. That's my concern here. So I don't know that the second component of your argument applies to this section of the statute.
I think that it does because, and I only have 20 seconds left, so I'll try to be brief.
Well, no, go ahead and answer the question.
Sure.
Unless you don't want to, but that's all right.
The position I've got is in the state of Smith, they did an analysis on the prior similar incidents. And they were very, they kept reminding the reader that the Part A is also important and sometimes could be more important. In fact, prior similar, they said that prior similar incidents, whether or not they exist, we can still look past that and look at the totality of the circumstances, thus not rendering Dowd completely moot. And I think that's the important distinction. It seems to give a little more weight to Part A than to Part B.
Well, but textually, it's an or.
I understand that. I understand that, Your Honor.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add? Any other questions from my colleagues?
That's it for me.
Apparently not. Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Drummond?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. To begin with the analysis of where there are the similar acts, these issues, as far as the incident reports, were in front of the district court. I don't respectfully disagree with counsel when they state that they were not in front of the district court. They were attached to the defendant's motion, counter motion for summary judgment, which was presented before the court. In addition, in their counter motion, and it's a public exhibits 253 to 258, is our expert report. So that was also presented to the district.
But it wasn't what you relied on in teeing up your motion.
Correct, Your Honor. What we relied upon was the fact that the corporate designee testified that there were 2 to 3 fights a week on the casino floor. What's interesting about those fights is that the defendant chose to engage in ostrich-like behavior and not document anything else about him. So what we have is we have the testimony about from the corporate designee that, yes, these fights happened, 2 to 3 on the casino floor, but they've chosen not to document it anywhere. So it's our position that clearly if we've got fights on the casino floor, that it's similar. And when I'm talking about similar, I'd look to the Smith case and look at many of the factors that the Smith case says, hey, analyze the location. We did. The casino floor, that's where they said it happened. Analyze the level of violence. Well, it was a fight. Mr. Noli didn't claim in the depot that there were guns used or any other sort of deadly weapon used. He said fight. Level of violence.
Did
in
they
case.
Challenge, though, that you had not demonstrated, I mean, part one of this statute says you have to show a wrongful act that was foreseeable, and then part B of paragraph one says
You have to show a preponderance of evidence that the owner or keeper did not exercise due care for the safety of the patron or the other person. And what I'm not clear about reading the briefs is what your theory was in terms of the lack of exercise of due care.
Absolutely. Here's a couple.
And that ties, the two are tied, whether you like it or not, to what they already knew about what was going on their casino floor.
Understand, Your Honor. A couple of key questions that were asked of Mr. Nulli during the deposition. And the questions that were asked and the answers were also unobjected to, which I think is important. In addition, our designation...
Well, but in depositions, people don't object to.
Understand, but in our designation of him, where we asked that they have the corporate designee as far as different subject areas, there was no objection either. So as to say, hey, somebody else would be the person we should have brought. There was no objection to his testimony binding New York, New York. And what some questions I asked about that, asked about, you know, how are they engaged in this behavior as far as security. Do you know how many security guards you need to keep the premises reasonably safe? Answer, no. Do you know how many patrons would be on your casino floor around this approximate time frame? Answer, no. Question, have you had a security audit within 5 years analyzing the security needs of this casino? Answer, no. They have no idea how many security personnel were needed to keep that casino floor reasonably safe. And why is that important? I asked Mr. Nulli the question, if you would have had more security, do you agree, does New York, New York agree, that fight could have been eliminated or at least the limit of it made, I guess, more limited? Answer, yes. So they know the consequences, they know what security can do, but they have no idea how many personnel it's going to take to do it. And instead, what we have is, well, we have fully staffed, as I think what the brief says, or we had 17 people, things of that nature. Well, during that deposition, I began walking through, what are these individuals' role? Because to say we have 17 security members, great. Are they there to protect the patrons or do other things? Most of them protect the money, not even allowed to leave the money when they're transported to go help in a fight unless it's a major event. And this kind of event, under their own definitions, they agreed, would not have been. What we finally narrowed it down is that they had three people for that entire casino floor. Our expert says that's not enough, and they had no idea if it was or was not, other than this event, this violent attack for 17 seconds, which I know seems like a short period of time, but on the casino floor, if you count down 17 seconds as she is being kicked, punched, beaten, that is a wild amount of time, and the video shows their security guard standing there and watching while she's getting massive amounts of trauma through her body in what arguably is the busiest area of the casino, where they have no idea how many people they need to have in security to keep it safe. That is our argument as it relates to whether or not they used due care. They didn't, and they don't know what it was. That in and of itself is a lack of due care for the patrons at that casino. If we continue on to, and I can address whatever as you all like, but part B of that, if we continue on to those prior incidents, why do we need more than his testimony, Mr. Nulli, binding that corporation that they've got 2 to 3 fights a week? That's what we have. And there's the argument that we should be distinguishing one type of fight versus another. Well, the Smith case looks at that, talks about distinguishing it by, is there firearms or deadly weapons used? Well, here we have prior fights in the casino floor. We have fight with Ms. Humphreys. Very similar. Implicates similar security issues. Was a concern in the Smith case. The security issues...
Drummond, I believe you've exhausted your time.
I didn't know if that was the yellow. I apologize, Your Honor.
No problem.
I was submitted on the rest. Thank you very much.
Quite all right. But I do want to congratulate counsel, all of you, on the excellent arguments today, and we appreciate your briefing and your input to the court. Thank you. The case will stand submitted.